You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson is with me. His website, his musings, can be found at filmology.com. And Josh, what's your Twitter handle? I just look at it automatically. I don't know what
Filmology,
it is.
Filmology with a PH.
With a PH, right. Look, this is a weird film. Inherent Vice. I mentioned it's based on a recent Thomas Pynchon novel. To be honest, I didn't realize Thomas Pynchon was still alive. We'll play you a bit of the film. If you've seen it, I'd love to know what you made of it. Josh, just give people a brief idea, if that is even possible, before we play them this scene, and then we'll get into the guts of it.
Okay, before I even try to describe the at least the initial plot setup, I think the best way that I've found to describe this film is a drug-addled detective tale. If you crossed a Raymond Chandler novel with Hunter S. Thompson,
yeah, 100%.
And set it in Zabriskie Point era Los Angeles, so 1970 Los Angeles, the turning point from the 60s to the 70s. That's really, I guess, tonally and historically where the film sort of falls. Boy, the plot itself initially begins in it in a style completely reminiscent of those Raymond Chandler novels. We have a guy called Doc Sportello, played by Joaquin Phoenix. He's sort of a stoner.
Sporting the biggest mutton chops ever.
Wonderful. He was born to play this role. His ex-flame walks into his house and confesses that she's been seeing a married man, this kind of property magnate played by Eric Roberts, and she fears she's being drawn into a plot by his wife and her partner to have him sent to the loony bin.
So she's basically been pulled into a plot where they're going to send him off to the loony bin and take all the real estate guy's money.
And thus begins a kind of a spiral.
And after that, the plot doesn't really make much sense.
Because he decides to take this case, even though he doesn't really know what the case is at this point, and neither do we, to be honest. And over the course of the narrative, he keeps taking on subsequent cases which seem loosely interconnected, and we're not sure if they are connected or it's just his kind of paranoia or this sort of drug haze which is linking all these various characters and themes of the film. Okay. That's probably the best way broad sense.
Now, the scene where they get pulled over by the cops, which we're about to play, has Joaquin Phoenix in it, at least. The other characters, not so much. So just for this scene, what do people need to know?
Look, okay, so much of the film, the structure of this film is kind of incoherent. We'll talk about maybe why it is in a moment. But I think one of the traits of this film is it's often a sequence of cameos, of kind of one scenes with particular characters where he meets them and then they're sort of removed from the narrative. And this scene follows a moment where he's just met a mad dentist, played by Martin Short, who's doing drugs, and he seems to have a younger woman on his side, which taps into one of Sportello's earlier cases.
And that's Joaquin Phoenix, Sportello.
Joaquin Phoenix. Yep. And they decide for various reasons to all jump in her car, having just snorted an enormous amount of drugs, and are pulled over. And Martin Short's paranoia is in the extreme, and Joaquin Phoenix is trying to keep a lid on things.
So have a listen. And to be honest, I'm not sure if what the policeman says is what they imagine or what he really says, but have a listen.
Are you the Great Beast?
No, that's a policeman.
You know you're driving without your headlights, ma'am?
But I can see in the dark.
Perhaps you shouldn't be driving, then. I'm going to need to see all your IDs, please.
And what is this all about, sir?
Any gathering of three or more civilians is now considered a possible cult.
What? It's Charlie Manson again?
Criteria includes reference to the Book of Revelation, males with shoulder-length hair or longer, and endangerment through inattentive driving, all of which you all have been exhibiting.
Oh, I don't think so.
Man, listen, this is a Mercedes.
Okay.
It's only painted one color.
Y'all hang tight.
That should count for something. That's a good point.
Okay.
I'm actually going to have a heart attack. Actually, my heart is racing like a little.
Yeah, if it doesn't make sense, to be honest, it didn't make much sense with pictures in front of my eyes this morning either. Okay, so Josh, let's get the good stuff out of the way first. Fantastic roles. Owen Wilson, Martin Short, Joaquin Phoenix is amazing.
Yep.
Josh Brolin is just extraordinary as the
straight man,
the straight detective.
The tough cop, yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix is the dirty hippie. He's often called the dirty hippie. Josh Brolin's got the clean flat top, beautiful suits.
The John Wayne stagger. And was it the glint in his eye that just spells civil rights abuses?
That's right. Okay, so this is some fantastic Thomas Pynchon lines. So if you like Thomas Pynchon as an author, there's a lot of that in it. But so here's maybe the crucial question. It is just this ramble through Joaquin Phoenix's life. You can't tell which bits are he's imagining, which is real. The plot's confusing even if you're paying close attention. Does it work as an immersion in this sort of drug-addled, quite satirical, incisive attempt?
I think so. And I had, look, I've seen this twice now. I
can't believe you watched it twice.
Yeah. And the first time, I just found it a joy. Like, I just found it.
Oh, did you?
I actually laughed consistently. And this was in a screening of Film Critics. I should point that out. And there was a lot of joy. And sometimes you are in screenings where you sense communal joy and that sort of feeds into your enjoyment of the film. And I think.
I had a small audience this morning. It was like the first session of the keynote. Only about 10 people. Good half of the people were laughing. But everyone was laughing at different moments.
Right.
But yeah, look, it's weird. It's genuinely weird. It's entertaining.
And I found it really fun. And I'm not sure I connected with it emotionally. It was completely lost and bamboozled by the plot. Part of it is the lack of coherence, the cause and effect narrative really isn't there. Part of it is I couldn't even understand some of the dialogue. I mean, it's that mumbling trademark, particularly the Joaquin Phoenix character. So all of that, but once I realised this was going to be the style of the film, I eased into it and thought, okay, let's just enjoy it. And the scenes by themselves, these almost little vignettes of these experiences, really held the film together for me.
And not like American Hustle, so it doesn't have that... Not that American Hustle was glossy, but it was very stimulating. There was a lot of period detail in American Hustle. This is really tamped down. It's not washed out sort of palettes or anything, but it seems quite real, actually. In some ways, it looks like it's been filmed in the real buildings that have never been repainted. So it's not glossy and glamorous. It's just happens to be set in 1970s LA.
And shot on film as well. And I think P.T. Anderson is one of these directors who hasn't made the step into digital yet. And I think that's a wonderful thing. Right. I'm kind of glad for it because these films look beautiful, even though they're not screaming, this is a beautiful film. So look, that was my first experience of the film. This morning when I watched it again, I was struck by almost a pervasive sense of melancholia that washes itself. And I saw it by myself.
It's a sad film.
It's a really sad film. And it's a sad film that works on two levels, I think. One is the central romantic relationship. Here it's a breakup film, really. I mean, it's Doc Sportello trying to deal with the fact he's not really over this relationship he's had with this woman who's brought this case to him and has fallen in love with a married man.
And it's a relationship broken apart as well by the whatever moral decay is going on in 1970s America with drugs and the disaffection with whatever used to be good, straight-laced America. That feeds into the despair and the nihilism of the relationship. And it's a real sort of 1970s US mirror.
It is, and I think that's where it works for me because it mirrors the personal relationship with the political. And this is something P.T. Anderson, and I've just watched almost all of his films again in the last month because Acme's had a retrospective on it, which has been wonderful.
I haven't seen enough of them.
He's such a talent. But the sense of the era ending, I mean, the hippie generation has fallen. There was a reference to Manson in that audio clip we just played. We get the sense that everything that all the potential of the countercultural movement of the 60s has collapsed. Like the reefer revolution has spiraled into the decay of heroin. The public housing is now being taken over.
There's a woman who's, Owen Wilson's wife actually, who's got all fake teeth because the heroin's taken her teeth. So it's quite distressing and depressing.
And that moment where he looks at the baby photo, and it's almost played for laugh. I laughed the first time I saw it, where she hands him this photo of the heroin baby to Joaquin Phoenix, and he just screams at this image of this child, which we don't actually see. But that was the thing that I think I appreciated more on the second viewing, and I was actually more invested in that, and also I had a greater understanding of the plot twists and turns and the connections between the character on a second viewing.
But here's the thing. It's a bit... you know what I felt? It's a little old-fashioned, the sort of the psychedelic ramble through the random collection of characters played by really good actors. Reese Witherspoon's another one who just pops up. Wasn't actually convinced that it's saying too much. I don't know if that's a problem. I don't know if you need to have some fantastic message. But I did constantly get the feeling he's just made an updated version of something that I'd seen before. It just didn't feel drastically refreshing and new.
I think for me that's what makes it new because it's so different to what we see now in terms of filmmaking. And it really characterised... There's almost two shifts in P.T. Anderson's filmmaking. There's the flashiness of his early film, Hard Eight, and then Boogie Nights, which again, similar era, 70s era LA.
Great films.
Then Punch Drunk Love, which is almost my favourite. I mean, he made Adam Sandler a good actor for one film. That's a triumph that no other director's really been able to do. And since then, we've seen some interesting twists with There Will Be Blood and The Master. And they are very much 70s style cinema. Slow burn, character-driven drama. Yeah. Structurally, they're not typical three-act cause and effect narratives. And I kind of like where he's going. I found the more challenging films. I mean, the fact that I felt the need to see this twice in its first month of release, you know, speaks volumes. There's not too many films that I do
that nearly
for.
Walked out.
Oh, wow.
90 minutes in, I was thinking, you know what? I think I know this film's not going anywhere. And then along comes... It's quite bizarre because all these serious scenes are played for laughs, and then the one sex scene is just actually very, very intense, and I couldn't work out. It's actually quite distressing at the end. There's no sexual violence or anything like that, but it's emotionally distressing, and that actually kept me going. But I don't know. I mean, I was thinking, would you stick with this? If you went to see this at 9:30 on a Saturday night and you were a bit tired, would you be able to stick with it? It does. It's not one-dimensional in its portrayal of different people, but something about the tone. There's no character arcs here. Stage 1, 2, 3 of a story.
And I guess that's why I appreciate it. But I think this film has been really divisive. And I think part of it is, and we talked about this 2 weeks ago when we talked about genre-defying films, and this film, now that I've seen the trailer, is being marketed as a sort of a fun stoner romp, which it really isn't. And I think that's been putting audiences off. Also, the fact that it is an incoherent narrative. We're so used to genre films, and this being a kind of a detective film, that has some resolution, that we understand that...
I didn't mind that. I'm up for no narrative. That's fine, if I'm enjoying it.
Well, I think there's a context for it here, so it does make sense. But I think perhaps the divisive response, I mean, this film has really divided audience, is in part a response to that... that incoherence, and that not given the traditional sense of resolution. I mean, there's a broader issue here that maybe we could come back to about why is it that audiences are so divided on films that typically aren't all that controversial. And we could throw Birdman, Foxcatcher, and this. These are not films with themes that would typically divide audiences, but they seem to be doing this at the moment.
Okay, look, we'll get into that in a moment. I'd love to know what you make of it if you've seen it. Morty Mick saying he just loves the sound of it. Awesome. I think that text came through just after the little clip we played. But look, 1300 222 774, love to know what you think of it. Josh Nelson is with me. Filmology is both the website and the Twitter handle, talking about Inherent Vice. Going to play you one of the tracks because it is really like a Chandler novel set to Hunter S. Thompson. And the track you're going to hear, by the way, is briefly mentioned in Inherent Vice and is a major part of both Leaving Las Vegas, the book, and Leaving Las Vegas, the film. But Josh, you were mentioning the division in reception. Do you think that's new, the sort of loving and hating of a film like this, like Birdman?
I think it's becoming more common. And my concern, well, I think it's a combination of factors. And this is just my take on it, that it's perhaps a product of the homogeneity of popular culture, that we're so used to films fitting a certain mold, and even the most minor deviations somehow...
So if you can't put it in a category...
Somehow, irritate audiences to the point where they just turn on it. I mean, we heard some of the talkback during our Birdman film, a film that I didn't think could offend anyone, and yet it really rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah. So there's been a similar response to Inherent Vice on some of the reviews and social media?
It has, and I think this is also a product of social media, and that in order to stand out, I mean, it's a wider issue, it's not just kind of film criticism, that you either love it or hate it, and you have to take an extreme opinion on everything now in order to stand out, whereas, for my take, most of popular culture fits in that very broad middle of the road band, where that's not really reflected in the critical response to these types of films. So it's just maybe this is something on the horizon. Maybe it's something I've been more aware of in recent times. But just the sort of the post-Oscars films seem to be inspiring this division, where I don't quite see why. I'm not quite sure why these films are the target.
It's all downhill from here, isn't it? After Inherent Vice, there's like nothing on the schedule.
I know we're in trouble. We're in real strife.
They've done the Oscar films. Yeah, that's it. It's just tentpole Avengers, whatever, until the end of the year.
Indeed.
Oh, well. Josh, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
You haven't read the book, have you?
I've just started the book. And the book is very much the unfilmable book that it was known as before Paul Thomas Anderson approached it.
Inherent Vice is the name of the film.